Let's quickly go over this picture as review. Check out your what's up, because I did an animation that kind of demonstrate this this idea. So it's on my Facebook, but I'll send you a link and we'll put it on what's up to the shear this year. It's called, what was it called? Well, it's called All for One, but the name of the Facebook was called, the title was How to Be the True You, okay? Anyways, it's on my Facebook page, but I'll send you a link to your, onto this What's Up, and you're new. What's your name?
Daniel Berger.
You're just sitting in?
I'm his brother.
You're his brother?
I'm also a Rabbi Bandit student.
Oh, okay. Very good. So he gave you front row seats. A good brother. All right, welcome.
We should just get your name when we attend the sheet at this point.
Okay, so very, very quickly, what's powerful about this picture is you can't count the people in this picture, because which one would be number one? Because they all exist because they all exist. None of these people could exist without all of these people. You take this person out of the picture, they'll all disappear. Okay? That's one way of understanding why is it us, or why is it forbidden to count Jews? Like when you have a minion, so you don't count them, because it suggests that, well, which one is going to be number one? Because no one can exist without everyone. Okay? No one can exist without everyone. You, and this is, I know, kind of trippy, but you are the culmination of every single human being on this planet, right? So imagine having a discussion with the guy here with the Shtreimel and saying that you exist as the culmination of everybody here. Just move in a little bit. Let's just get used to that, right? Because this way people can come in. Just come sit in closer. That'll take it. Also, if you guys can, this is all this empty space in here. Yeah. Sorry, it is what it is in terms of the space of the room. Is there another chair? Is this?
Bring the chair here. There's room right here.
Yeah. Also, open the door so there's air. So for this guy to exist, everybody, so he's actually this entire picture at this point of the picture. And this woman is the entire picture as it culminates and concentrates at this point in the picture. And that would suggest the idea that you're creating the image of Hashem, Hashem being the all, and how every individual is really an individual expression of the all. Okay? Now imagine if, these two guys, this guy and this guy, if they're stuck in their ego, they would think, I'm self-contained, he thinks I'm self-contained, and he thinks, I don't need you, and you actually annoy me, and life would be much better if you were to disappear. So should he actually disappear, everyone would disappear. And so that's what we were talking about by looking at the source. We looked at Rav Moshe Cordovero, who said that the idea that after lecha kamocha, that we are each guarantors for each other, because he literally says that the souls are included within each other, and within each and every one of us is each and every one of us, okay? And that should be a very different consciousness, you know, and kind of like, think about that. The next time you're walking down the street, look at every human being, realize that that person is actually a part of me in some deep way, and I'm actually a part of them, yeah?
So what about the one woman who starts the basis for everyone else? Like,
there is no one woman, and that's what he's suggesting here, Escher. There's no beginning to this picture. He's suggesting that goes on and on and on, right? He doesn't, you see, He's suggesting that there's an infinite, right? So that means that the infinity of all these people is what now enables the manifestation and the emergence of each single individual here, right? And that's a very Torah idea. And then we looked at the Tanya, and now we're going to look at Rav Kook number in source 2, okay? So the reason why I'm sharing this is I want to understand what holiness is. What does it mean to be holy? Why would I want to be holy? Yeah.
If someone does decide to leave, how does that realistically affect everyone else? Or if someone,
leave what?
I don't know how they could leave, but if they feel like they're not part of the community anymore, or somehow do something.
So that's a scary thing. Every move this guy makes is reverberating through every single one of us. That's the idea. The Rambam says that you should look at your life as the scales are half and half, and this one act could tip the scales for everybody. Whoa, good to see you. Wow, what a treat. Okay. So that could tip this, it's just another part of yourself that walked in. Okay, so so that could literally tip the scales for everybody. And the Rambam says that the whole world is counting on this one act. And that's a consciousness that I think we all need to adopt, and I'm including myself. It's hard to believe that one small act could make a huge difference to the entire universe, right? But this is what this idea is expressing. And science is saying that, you know, that you could have a butterfly that's flapping its wings and that's causing a tornado somewhere. The interfacing, and that was like the big chiddush that Judaism brought to the world. Because the world basically had all these idols, all these forces, and these forces were conflicting and warring against each other. And Judaism was saying that there's really oneity, and there's harmony, and everything is integrated, and everything's a part of everything, and we should strive to act in ways that would promote this sense of harmony and wholeness. That's what it means to serve Hashem. To serve Hashem means to serve to bring greater awareness of the wholeness and the oneness of the universe. That would be the direct implication of knowing Hashem. So let's look at this piece of Rav Kook. The ultimate goal of life is holiness. That's the goal of life, is to be holy. Okay? I can't think of one of the most important sentences in all of Judaism. That the goal of life is to be holy. And then he's going to give us an understanding of what that is. Now, I think I might have shared with you, I was speaking to a number of educators, and I asked them, you know, every company has a mission statement. So what do you think the mission statement of Judaism is? One said to fear God. That's it. We're here to fear Hashem. That's it. Another one said to do mitzvahs, just to do mitzvahs, and it's none of our business anything more than that. Another one said to make Hashem happy. Right? That's why we're here. He's not happy. Miskin, poor God, right? Not happy, needs people to give up on the double cheeseburgers to make him happy. Okay? But that's what he believes, right? Rav Kook is telling us that the goal of Jewish life is to be holy. And how do we know that? You're saying this every single day. You are literally expressing and affirming the mission statement of the Jewish people. When do you do that? Every day. In Shema and Esrei? No? In Shema, no? Asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav. Baruch ata Hashem, blessed be you Hashem. Asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav. He who made us holy through his mitzvahs. That's it. Mitzvahs are to make you holy. And what does it mean to be holy? This. What would make this guy a holy person? What would make this guy a holy person? Yeah?
If he's aware of how he connects with everyone, how he's related to everyone else.
Exactly. He's aware of the wholeness of the universe. How every part is part of a whole. And to be a whole part, you got to be part of a whole. Right? And that's what I mentioned to you before, that, you know, to try and explain mitzvahs and halacha from the standpoint of how it benefits you as an individual is already a confusion in Judaism. It's a corruption of Judaism. Because Judaism is about building community, okay? Because the way you become whole is when you become part of a whole community. And so when we do things, and we're all doing the same thing, right? Then that's powerful. We're all making tea the same way on Shabbos. It doesn't really matter. Is there some deep mystical reason for that? I believe there is. But on the simple level, we're all doing it together, that creates uniformity. That creates synchronicity. That enables us to feel more that connectivity. Yeah, Tani?
When, if we were to bring this idea to non-Jews, are the Shem Mitzvah B'nai Noach, the suggestions of how non-Jews could...
They're not suggestions. That's how... They have to live that way to be part of a unified world. But that whole concept of the unified field, we've been saying that a long time ago. We're all connected. Hashem is one. We're all children of the same Father, right? We're different children. We're all connected. But we're more than just simply the children of one Father. Because, you know, the children of one Father. The Father's over there. The children over here. They live millions of miles apart from each other. What connection do they have? You know. But Yiddishkeit is saying that literally we are connected. And it's our bodies that is confusing us to think that we're self-contained, self-sufficient, independent, disconnected. We are islands, right? And we're not part of a greater whole. And that's your body giving that vibe off. So that's what that's our problem with our bodies, right? And it says that Adam and Eve didn't have a body of skin. Anybody know what their body was made of? It was made of light. They had light bodies. They didn't have to diet. It was really easy, you know. They had light bodies, right? The Midrash says that in the Garden of Eden there were no shadows. What's that supposed to mean, there were no shadows? Well, what creates a shadow? Solid things blocking out the light. But if nothing's solid, if everything's made of light, well then light isn't being interfered by all the light. And we're all kind of transparent, right? And interconnected, and nobody, you know, conflicted with anybody. It's a powerful image, yeah? Nothing. There were trees.
But they were not made of.
They weren't made of this stuff. Right? There's something about the universe which didn't block out the light. Nothing had gave off this vibe of fragmentation, disconnection. It was all whole. It was all one. He actually has an interesting picture. Here he is.
Is it very hot out there?
It was hot. I don't know.
No shadows? No shade.
All right. He has a picture of different items that are kind of interconnected, like animals and trees. And so he's again suggesting how every individual entity is really an individual expression of the whole. That is what Judaism is saying, that fan is an individual expression of the entire universe as it culminates at this point of the fan, right? And
A couple weeks ago, you gave the metaphor like that when you die and when souls become. You said like you gave the example like how many lights in the room. It's like it's not that there are six lights. It's like you can't count how much lights in the room. So it seems like the way like you described Gan Eden, it's like similar that it wasn't very physical.
No, it could have been physical, but this consciousness I mentioned last time in the scientific theory called the holographic universe. And in the holographic universe, within every part is the whole. Well, Judaism was saying that long time ago. Right? That's what we believed. And idolatry was, again, creating there's this God, then this God, this God. And when Abraham was saying, no, there's one God, that was the beginning of a perception of the unification of the universe. Right? And it's developed more and more and more. Okay, Shirley?
So, given that, based on how Gan Eden is written in the Torah, does that mean that the initial objective of what people's purpose was, in terms of now that we get holy, did it change from when the story had initially begun until now?
That would take more time to explain. What did they need to do over there? Basically, they needed to choose, right? They need to make a choice. And we have to wait until we get to what is our choice in life? What are our choices? But right now, I want it to be very clear. Rav Kook is making this very, very simple. The ultimate goal of life is holy. That's all I want, and that's all you want. Everybody wants to be holy completely themselves. That's all I want. I just want to be me. But the interesting thing is, this guy says, I just want to be me, so I got to get rid of everybody else because you're all cramping my style, right? You're all annoying me. I can't be me with all of you guys around me. And the answer is what?
Wrong.
The only way you could be me is with everybody else. I need everybody to be me. And they're not going to be me and I'm not going to be them, but yet we can't be without each other. That's a very powerful experience. Right? That's a very powerful experience. And that's what I mentioned, you know, when you're in a band and you're so synchronized that you each individual instrumentalist kind of feels like the whole band is playing that guitar. The whole band is playing those drums because we're so one. And that is what we're looking for. When we see people on stage with that perfect choreography and they're dancing in this perfect synchronicity, why is that pleasurable to our eyes? Why do we find that, uplifting? Because we are in search of the harmony. We're in search of the oneness. That's the search for God, right? That a person who knows Hashem, they know that the universe should reflect this truth of oneness, right? So that's why we love music. You know, the prophets, except for Moshe Rabbeinu, they would use music to get inspired to become, you know, prophetically capable of downloading Hashem's word. So we love that union. We love that oneness. We love being able to sing together and talk together and creating that kind of synergy, you know. So he says the ultimate goal of life is holiness. Holiness is supreme unity, which contains nothing of the weakness of morality. So now he's going to distinguish between holiness and morality. What is the difference? Because most people think that Judaism is about morality. And Rav Kook is going to tell us that Judaism is about holiness. And they're not the same thing. How are they not the same? Holiness does not fight against self-love embedded deep within the soul of every living being. Morality is saying, you got to stop loving yourself so much. That's your problem. Care about other people. Stop caring about yourself. Right? And self-love for morality is an obstacle to morality. Rav Kook is saying holiness wants you to love yourself. Why does holiness want you to love yourself? That's right. If you really loved yourself, you'd love everybody. If my finger really loved itself, and I'm really worked on and helping him because he has a hard time, right? Because he's jealous of my thumb. But if I could get my index finger to really love itself, it would love the entire body. Because I'm not a finger without a body, right? And the body would, of course, love the finger. I mean, what is cancer? Cancer is a cell that says, you know, I'm doing my own thing. I don't need anybody else here. I'm my own man. I go ahead and do my own thing. Right? And that's cancerous. So too, when a human being begins to perceive themselves as separate from and independent of everyone else, and it's going to play by its own rules. Right? In fact, yesterday, I saw this woman, she had a t-shirt, and it said, "My body, my rules." Wow. I wanted to stop and say, "Could I take a picture of your t-shirt?" But I, you know, because that is so stupid. Right? Excuse me? That's a stupid t-shirt? Like, it's not your body. It's our body. Right? We're all connected. Right? We're all connected. What is it? Your body, my body. There's no such thing. Right? But everybody thinks this, you know, nobody, everybody. There's only one body. Right? We are cells in that body of the divine, so to speak. Right? And so, my body, my rules. Right? Which is a beginning for another shiur, and how much is really your body in the first place, you know? But just a little bit more, and then I'm happy to respond to you, or try to respond to your question, right? Holiness does not fight against self-love. See, what is morality? So let's say you've got, you know, I had a student that was at a Raita. Actually, it was Ron Dermer. You know who Ron Dermer is? Yeah, the ambassador.
Yeah.
So he was a student of Israelite. So Ron came into my office, and he said to me that his father was the most moral man he ever knew. His father was the mayor of Miami Beach for a long time. And he said his father at that point had already passed away. Family's a very politically, you know, minded family. And so Ron... he wasn't even in college yet. He was just about to go to college. So Ron told me that his father was the most moral man, and he doesn't think that if his father had Torah in his life, he would have been more moral. So I said to him, do you think he would have been holier? So he looked at me like a little surprised at that. And said, well, what do you mean by that? I said, see, that's the mistake people make. People think that the goal of Jewish life is to be moral. Well, it's not. The goal of Jewish life is to be holy. Now, you can't be holy if you're not moral. But you could be moral and yet still not be holy. Right? What's the difference between an act of morality and an act of holiness? Okay? So let's say you got this poor man on the street. Two people walk by, pull out $10, hand the poor man $10. One did an act of morality, another one did an act of holiness. What's the difference between the two acts? Obviously, intention. What is the intention of the one who did an act of holiness versus the one who did an act of morality? Now, I'm not diminishing the importance of the moral act. I just want you to understand the difference between acting morally and not. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you do it like you want to, the other is because you want him to be better and you feel bad for him.
Okay. So what you're saying is he wants to, so that's the holy one. I want to give this man money. The other one is feeling what?
That, like, you're doing this for yourself to make you feel better, that you contributed to someone else.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. It's really what you think.
That morality is more because it's just you want to help him plainly, but holiness is you want to help him for the purpose of, like, interconnection because you recognize that helping him is like helping yourself.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, let's go back to what Rav Kook said. Rav Kook said that morality is different than holiness because holiness does not fight against the deep self-love embedded in the soul. Now, by the way, most say that Rav Kook is referencing Nietzsche over here. He's not saying Friedrich Nietzsche, but Friedrich Nietzsche said that morality is doomed to bankruptcy. Man cannot be moral. Why? Because people love themselves. And morality is asking you to give up your self-love. So this is what Rav Kook is referring to. And he's agreeing with Nietzsche. He's saying, you know what? Morality will not work. Right? Morality will not work. Why will morality not work? Well, there's a bird in here. Is it really a bird?
Yeah, I hear it. I hear it.
All right. Well, at least he's not taking any space in the class. He stopped. He got, uh-oh. They know I'm here. I hear this little chirping bird. Okay. So Nietzsche said that morality is bankrupt because you can't ask people to be selfless. Mankind is by definition selfish. And Rav Kook is agreeing with him, right? But there's two kinds of selfishness. There's a bad selfishness and a good selfishness. What's the bad selfishness? Looking back at this picture, what would make this guy having bad selfishness? What's his selfishness? Yeah?
That he's alone in this world and not getting rid of everyone else will be okay.
That's right. It's ego selfishness. It's his little self. It's his isolated, separated, self-contained self. That's called ego. That I'm self-contained and independent, right? But a person has a true sense of self. If they were selfish, what would they do? Yeah, Tani?
They would serve themselves through helping others because they are others.
That's right, because if my finger were really selfish, it would care about the body, right? It wouldn't say, well, who cares about toes? They're way down there. Well, in my case, they're not so far away. But they're way down there. Who cares about toes, right? But if he realizes, hey, we're all connected and every part of the body is serving every part of the body, right? So Rav Kook is saying, be selfish. Now, who did you ever hear Rabbi say that? It seems like Judaism was asking to be selfless. And who can be selfless? Well, morality is asking to be selfless. You see this poor guy, I want to hold on to my money. But you know, it's not good to be selfish. It's better to give than to receive. And so I really should give up on my caring about myself so much and care about him. And Nietzsche was saying, that's just not human. People care about themselves. Rav Kook says, that's right. People care about themselves. And that's why they should take care of the world. Because if you knew who you truly are, you would care about everybody else too, because we're all connected, okay? So let's read that inside. He says, the ultimate goal of life is holiness. Holiness is supreme unity, which contains nothing of the weakness of morality. Morality is weak. You know, it's telling you, you shouldn't care about yourself. You're too preoccupied with yourself. Forget about yourself. You're not important, right? And this is why we've lost Jews to Judaism, because they think to do tshuva means forget about yourself. You're not important. Only God is important. Right, you got to nullify yourself and just acknowledge God is the big boss and you're nobody. Right, that's just not going to work. Right, the human being can't take that. He says holiness does not fight against the self-love embedded deep within the soul of every living being. Rather, it sets man in such a superior state that the more he loves himself, the more the good with him, or within him, it should be actually within him, will spread over all around him. Over the world, all of being. That's what Jewish education should be about, to help you love yourself. But truly love yourself. Love the real you. Who is the real you? The real you is the entire universe as it concentrates and culminates at this point and this point and this point. And as I told you before, you've just been listening to yourself the whole time, and I've just been talking to myself the whole time. Not that I'm you and you're not and you're me, but on some deep level, we're all interconnected. We're all sharing one self. We're all the unraveling of one self. That is what we mean when we say Hashem. So let's do some questions. Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel like this idea that we're all each other, like in ourselves, is very hard.
Yeah, I want to be very clear. I'm not saying we're all each other. I'm not you, and you're not me. But I can't be me without you, and you can't be you without me. So part of your personal definition includes me, and part of my personal definition includes you. And if I try to exclude you, I'm hurting myself. So to speak lashon hara about another person is self-deprecating. To try and rip off another person is self-deprecating. Okay? Because that's the true reality of who we really are. Is we're all connected and we're all interfaced with each other. Okay? But I'm not you and you're not me.
So I feel like that idea is very hard for people to grasp.
Of course it's hard to grasp. But science is proving it to be more and more true. And the beginning of this is to begin to at least acknowledge that possibility that we're that connected, you know, and that Judaism, at least understand Judaism correctly, is not asking you to be moral. Because a guy like Nietzsche says, I want you to know that people are basically selfish. So we're asking people to go against their nature. And I'm not a fan of getting people to go against their nature, because that just doesn't work. Rav Cook is saying, you're right. People should not go against their nature. They should go with their higher nature. Their higher nature is that their true self is interfaced with all other people. And when I see that guy in the street, of course I'm going to help him. Because I just saw a little bit of myself on the street. And I was very selfish to help him, because there's a little bit of me there, right? The other one, he says, there's him, there's me, we've got nothing to do with each other, but I feel guilty. Judaism says I should be nice to people. Don't really feel like being nice to some stranger, but okay, I better do that because, I gotta do that. Now, that could be coming from self-love too, because I want to protect myself, because God forbid that might happen to me, right? But that's little self-love, right? Not big self-love. So there's big self-love, and there's little self-love. Little self-love is ego. Big self-love is soul. To move from ego to soul is to realize that the goal is to be whole. That's the goal. Yeah.
Are holiness and meaning related?
Oh, yeah. For sure. Because what gives a word meaning? It's the fact that it's part of a greater story. And all these words, if one of these words was missing, something would go wrong with the whole paragraph. So we're all interconnected. So meaning is part of this feeling that my definition is bound up with the future of everybody else's definition. Right? And we have to care about the world. And this whole attitude that people think the Jews don't care about the world, that's so not Jewish. but that's just so not Jewish. Yeah, Aaron.
So if you're deeming, if we want to deem moral to be like what God feels is right as opposed to what
No, God, Rav Kook is saying that we've got a misunderstanding of what Judaism wants. The normative understanding of morality, which is against that self-love and telling you, forget about yourself, you're not important, right? That's your problem. Care about others and stop thinking about yourself. That won't work, and that's not what Judaism was saying. It was saying, love your neighbor as yourself, ki ani Hashem, because I am all there ever was, is, and ever will be, and there is only one I am, and his I am and your I am are facets of one shared I am, which is Hashem.
That's holiness that we're talking about.
That's holiness, yes.
So I'm saying, but if morality is not what society deems to be moral, it's what God says is moral, then wouldn't it be also...
I don't know why you keep bringing up the word moral. Forget about moral. Be immoral, Eras. No. All right. Be holy. Be holy. The question is, how do you get to holiness? It's through morality. Because morality is saying, you're caring too much about your ego. We want you to love your true self and become holy. Now, it's hard to jump to holiness. So yeah, we're going to employ morality, which is going to speak the language of, you got to fight that self-love, but fight that little self-love, that childish self-love, that self-love which is really egotistical love, narcissism. That's not what we're talking about. But you have to beat that ego. So when you nullify your ego, you allow the release of your soul, and you work from a place of love. Right? And it's not from a place of fear. Right? I'm not afraid that I'll be hurt. Right? I want to do this. I want to help other people. And it's coming from a very selfish place, but it's a superior selfish. It's not a negative. Selfish is not necessarily a negative idea, right? Let's read a little bit more. Look at the next piece of Rav Kook. The great thought of the oneness of being eliminates the question of love itself. The question considered by some is the root of sin, and by others is the basis of morality. When you realize that all being is one, not one of the same, but all is one, then the whole question of love, right? Like, you know, whether love is, you're sinning because you love yourself too much, or you're not moral because you love yourself too much. There is only love of all, right? There's only one love, right? I mean, who said that? Well, Mark. Okay, he actually also did his life. And so, right, so there's only one love. And that is the love of all, right? That is the love of all. If you love Hashem, you will love all people. And if you love people, then you really love Hashem, right? Like, I can't love your hand. Your hand is a part of you. So if I love your hand, then it means I love you because your hand is a part of you. So he says, which is truly self-love. The love of all is self-love, enlightened and sublime. Now look at this. False self-love, which loves the small spark visible to bleary eyes, right? That's false self-love. And hates the clarifying selfhood. This is blindness as foolishness as it is wicked. In other words, when you love the small spark, that's the ego. The bleary eyes is, I just see bodies. Like the Balatanya said, it's just our bodies that are separating us. Right? But in the deepest level, we're all really connected. Okay? Look at the next piece. Life itself, all of life, its very essence, cannot possibly be anything other than the elemental longing to be close to Hashem. What is life? These are like, wow, statements. I mean, these are like keys. What is life? What is life? What does it mean to be alive, Rav Kook is saying? Yeah.
To want to be close to God.
Exactly. It's the elemental longing to be close to God. That's what it means to be alive. Even people that don't believe in God, right? Even people that aren't religious. Aliveness is the yearning to be close to God. But if you think that means there's some guy in the sky over there, nobody's going to buy that. But if you understand that Hashem is the one self, the one soul of the universe, so then what is life? What does it mean to get close to God? To feel that you share one essence, one being with all beings. You want to feel at one with the universe, one with nature. You know? I mean, Woody Allen, who's an atheist, said, I feel at two with nature. You know what I mean? But we're talking about feeling at one with nature, at one with the music. When do you love the music? When you're at one with the music. So the basic drive of life, when do I feel alive? When I'm feeling that I'm becoming more at one with life, at one with people, at one with nature, at one with supernature, at one with the one that everyone is a part of, the one that everyone is just someone of that one. That's what it means to be alive. And when people don't feel that, they don't feel alive. And that's what I said. That's why, like, those rock concerts that I went to, they're amazing. We're all rocking together. The music united us. We were all singing the same song. We were all singing the same lyrics. And that guy on the front, he was like the high priest. And he was conducting this feeling that we shared this one self. And I shared with you that my favorite moment of the rock concerts was when everybody was holding that match. And at that moment, I felt part of a greater fire. And it wasn't small. It was like, on one hand, I'm identifying with a match. On the other hand, I'm identifying with being part of this greater fire. And that is what's driving human beings, is to be part of a greater whole. Everybody wants to be part of the greater whole, okay? And, you know, there was actually an article I read on marketing where they say that today they know that you don't market products. People aren't interested in products. So what they market are values. Like, just do it has nothing to do with it, right? What's it got to do with running shoes? Nothing. It's actually a Zen Buddhist idea to just do it. But it's a principle that transcends items. And by identifying with some principle that people can identify with, there's this feeling that I'm transcending the world of things and identifying with a principle that transcends things, right? And that unites me. That's what's going on. People want to feel part of something greater. It's like Apple products. They've created a community around Apple. If you go into Apple stores, a lot of the Apple stores look like a sanctuary. You've got Apple kind of floating in the middle, and they've got these high ceilings. This is intentional. They're creating a religion, okay, that we're all Apple users, okay? And the truth is that the Apple is basically the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. That is what he said. The guy that came up with that told a friend of mine that he downloaded the whole idea of Apple on an LSD trip, right? And he decided to call it Apple because the drug was the forbidden fruit. And so really, that's the Eitz HaDaat. It's the Apple. Right? It's the Apple. We're going to be gods. We're going to be our own gods. Technology is going to take over the world. Right? That's what technology is. Technology is to transcend the limitations of time and space. Technology wants to be God. We, through technology, will be God. But Rav Kook is saying like this, right? Life, what do you mean to be alive? When do we really feel alive? When we feel close to God. When do we feel close to God? When we feel part of a greater whole that unites us all. Thus it fulfills the unique connotation of human life. What is unique about human life? Composed of the desire for a sense of self shared by all creatures. That's what's unique about human life. Is that I yearn, desire a sense of self shared by all creatures. Along with the striving for completeness. I want to be more holy. Wholly. I want to be more complete, completely part of the greater whole. In this, it is a true shadow of the absolute, unconditional life of the absolute divine in the image of God he created them. That's what it means to reflect divinity. When you're yearning to be part of that greater whole, that shared self, where people are sitting in a room and they're in the darkness. Why do we like the darkness? It basically diminishes that whole body energy. I can't see bodies in this darkness. There's an amazing experience that I recommend you go to. It's Slonim Hasidim late Friday night, I think. It's late Friday night, or maybe it's third meal, I can't remember. But the Slonim teenagers sit in this huge room in pitch dark, singing these songs that have no apparent melody at all. And they all know it. I mean, literally, the songs sound like this. It's the weirdest thing. You just sit there, and it's so trippy. You know, just like, and they're all knowing it, and they're all in it, and it's dark. So I brought a friend of mine who is an accomplished jazz musician, studied in some of the top jazz schools in the United States. He told me, I don't know how they know this. This is the most advanced stuff in music today in the world of jazz. They're literally tapping into a kind of music that they understand that only now is coming out, right? And they're all in it together, and it's like, whoa, so powerful. When people are together, wow, that is so powerful. Because at that moment, you get a little taste of Hashem. You get a little glimpse of the presence of Hashem that unites us all. Yes, Ruben.
So this idea that when we could all choose, there's like a certain unique connection, I guess, in terms of our souls. So how does that relate to people who convert to Judaism? Their souls then join?
Well, according to the Arizal, they were Jews in previous lives. And this was something they needed to do as their tikkun, their fixing in this life, is to choose it. Yeah.
So I mean, there are a finite number of Jews then?
No, there's not a finite number of Jews. But what basically happens is like a tree. You have a tree, and then there's a branch. Out of that branch comes other branches. Out of those branches come twigs. Out of those twigs come little twigs. And so that's how it's all unfolding. But we're all connected. Right, we're all connected on a very deep level to one root self, so to speak. Yes.
Why is it that we are more naturally like bonded or more united over tragedy opposed to like simcha?
Why are we more bonded over tragedy than simcha? Yeah, that's a sad truth. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Maybe our guard goes down because we feel sorry for this person. I think it's easier for us to feel sorry than to take pleasure in other people's happiness. We feel sorry for their sadness and we empathize more. I don't know, it's sad. Look at this next piece, number 5. The supreme holiness is the holiness of silence, of being. When man recognizes himself as non-existent in his individual inwardness and lives a collective life, the life of all. Now, what's the holiness of silence? You see, words breaks up everything. As I mentioned to you already, the word means to cut. Mila means to cut. Teva means a box. Davar means a thing. So that means that words takes reality and takes it, cuts it into pieces, turns it into things, stuffs it into boxes, and separates everything. But in truth, we're all connected. We're all one. We're just not one and the same, but we're all one. So when you get to the holiness of silence, where you're kind of beyond the words that break us up into pieces, and you get that sense that as an individual you don't exist, there isn't a separate individual, right? But actually you are living Klal Yisrael. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu is when he would say, I, he was thinking Klal Yisrael. See, when you're a child and you think I, you think of your children. I mean, you think of your parents. And your parents are part of your I-ness, right? But when you get a little older, you have friends, you know? When you say I, then that could include your friends, right? When you get older, you get married, you say I, it includes your wife, your children, right? But a tzaddik, when he says I, it includes Klal Yisrael. When Klal Yisrael's in pain, he's in pain, right? Because he's that connected. He so identifies that he feels that he's living Klal Yisrael. Yes? Sam?
So if someone chooses level, then how do they ever make any life choices?
Like, well, let's wait until we get to what the choices are in the first place. We haven't talked about what choice is and what are we choosing. Yeah?
If Kedusha is holiness and holiness is unity, I guess, why do we so, I mean, like, traditionally it's often translated as sanctification and separation.
Yeah, that's a confusion. The word separation is not a good description. Transcendence would be a better definition. Because transcendence means I'm so above it that I can include it. I'll give you an example. What does it mean, you know, to truly transcend this world? To transcend this world, let's say an alcoholic. So you have a, you know, I don't know if I ever shared this with you, but I was at somebody's home and they did Kiddush. And they passed around little shot glasses of the wine. The guy next to me passed his wine, and naively I said, no, that's for you. And there was this uncomfortable moment, and he said, oh, but he wasn't going to taste it. So I realized, oh, God, okay, the guy's an alcoholic, okay? Now, is it good that he has separated himself from wine? Yes. Is he still addicted? Yes, right? Because, and again, I'm not in any way diminishing the greatness of his determination to stay away from it. But that's called separation, right? And that's the first step towards Kedusha, is to separate yourself from the physical world and not be addicted to it. But in a certain way, you actually still are addicted to it. You're just avoiding it. But that's a good start. But the goal is to not separate yourself from alcohol, but to transcend alcohol. Which means that you can have a little bit without finishing the bottle, okay? So now you can include alcohol in your life, right? But it doesn't control you, and you don't become a slave to it. So that's the real highest level of what Kedusha is. In other words, when are we, what day is the holiest day of our week? Shabbat. What is the most physical day of our week? Shabbat. Right? I mean, there's no way on Shabbat, I don't eat anywhere close to, I eat enough for Shabbat for the entire week. I mean, like, you eat so much on Shabbat. Why? If it's supposed to be a holy day and separate from the physical, why are we being so physical? Because it's so holy that it includes the physical. That God is so holy that he doesn't exclude the physical, but rather the physical is included within the divine truth and not separated from the divine truth. Okay, so that's really what holiness is. But you get through holiness through prishut. Prishut means to separate yourself from the physical world so that you can get a handle on it in order to go back to it and include it. And that will be the higher holiness. Yeah.
So are the different groups of charedim that separate themselves, isolate themselves, are they separating themselves too much from the physical?
I don't know. I can't say. So this is a quantum physicist by the name of David Baum, who was a Jewish guy. And look what he writes. You would think that he had studied Judaism, but he didn't. Or maybe he did a little bit, but he was not identified with Torah Judaism. One is led to a new notion of unbroken wholeness, which denies the classical idea of an analyzability of the universe into separately and independently existing parts. We have reversed the usual classical notion that the independent elementary parts of the world are the fundamental reality, and that the various systems are merely particular contingent forms and arrangements of these parts, that the whole is emerging out of the parts. That's not true anymore. Rather, we say that the inseparable quantum interconnectedness of the whole universe is the fundamental universe. What's fundamental is the connected wholeness. What's real is wholeness. And that would be what we call Hashem. And that relatively independently behaving parts are merely particular contingent forms within the whole. The parts are unfolding from the whole. The whole's not emerging out of the parts. The parts are emerging out of the whole in various manifestations of the whole. Indeed, the attempt to live according to the notion that the fragments are really separate is, in essence, what has led to the growing series of extremely urgent crises that is confronting us today. That's the problem that Judaism came to fight, this separation, this conflicting realities, right? Thus, as it's known well, it's now well known, this way of life has brought about the creation of an overall environment that is neither physically nor mentally healthy for most of the people who have to live in it. The notion that all fragments are separately existent is evidently an illusion, and this illusion cannot do other than lead to endless conflict and confusion, right? This is what Torah was teaching all along, right? Of the ultimate interconnectedness of the universe, that the elementary reality What's primary is the whole, and the individual parts are facets. They're not even parts separated from the whole, but facets of the whole. And each and every one of us is that. And science is proving that more and more and more. And Judaism is about how to live that, how to create communities based on that, how to be that. Okay? So let's hear any questions if there are. So that's it for today. And that was, you can take the source sheet if you want. Okay, thank you.